banana sale in for Leonard Lopate. 10 years ago, shortly after winning his second Oscar, Kevin Spacey moved to London to run the Old Vic Theatre Company. In the decades since, he's overseen more than 39 plays, starred in 7, and directed 2. For the past 2 seasons, he's also starred in the Netflix series House of Cards. He's Francis Underwood, Washington, D.C. power broker. In 2012, Kevin Spacey toured the world as Richard III, that infamous Shakespearean antihero. This amazing production and tour are documented in his new film, Now, In the Wings on a World Stage. And I am glad that all of this has brought Kevin Spacey here today. Welcome to the Leonard Lopate Show. When did you first read William Shakespeare?
Oh, I was very young. I was very fortunate to be raised in a family where my mother and father were very cultural. They believed in the arts. They believed in exposing their children to incredible books. We used to sit around on Sundays and read from... My father had this incredible collection of books, which I now have, sort of hardcover, wonderfully printed books, very often from the Heritage. So Shakespeare was just a part of my life from a very, very early age, and his poetry and poems and the plays. But also, I was fortunate that my parents believed in theater and took me to the theater, and so I got exposed to sort of great music and great artistry and all sorts of things as a very young child. I didn't really do it as an actor until I was in high school, when I started to participate in some of the Shakespeare festivals and the Renaissance Pleasure Fair and other things that were going on for us young, budding, thespians in our drama class.
What was your first Shakespeare role?
I believe the very first time I did Shakespeare anywhere publicly was in the Woodland Hills shopping mall during a number of days in which they had brought together famous characters. So I believe that I was Romeo with a Marilyn Monroe.
Not bad.
It wasn't bad. And I think it was my very first paid job. I think I got $25 for doing a couple of Romeo monologues.
With Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
You've said that playing Richard III prepared you for Francis Underwood in House of Cards. How?
I would go even farther than that. I would say that not only the specific experience of playing Richard III, which for people who don't know that Francis Underwood in the original British series Francis Urquhart and in the original book that Michael Dobbs wrote, House of Cards, he based the character of Francis on Richard III, on to some degree Iago. So there's a clear connection. Not just because of the direct address, which of course happens in Richard III and happens in House of Cards, and was not invented, as many people might presume, by Ferris Bueller, but in fact invented by Shakespeare. That I would also say that moving to London 11 years ago, doing the number of plays that you mentioned, working with the number of directors, Trevor Nunn, Howard Davies, Matthew Warchus, Sam Mendes, all of the work that I have been doing over this decade in London has gone into preparing me for House of Cards. I'm a better actor today than I was when I moved to London a decade ago.
Shakespeare provides some sort of explanation for Richard III's darkness and his singularity of purpose and his physical defects. We don't have that with Francis Underwood.
Well... In terms of Richard III, he is obviously that play is a part of a many number of plays. I think 6 plays where you watch the Duke of Gloucester move forward and ultimately become Richard III. In the case of Francis Underwood, he is in many ways a creation of Beau Willimon, who is our head writer on House of Cards. And although we used the original book and the original series as a kind of launching pad and a foundation, we really have gone off on our own ways. And the thing that I would say about maybe why the series has become so popular and the character has become so interesting to people is because there are a lot of things that you don't know. There's a tremendous amount of mystery. People wonder about the relationship between Claire and Francis. People don't understand everything. And I think that that's one of the great joys, first for an audience, but second for me. You know, I don't show up at work every day on the set of House of Cards and think I know everything about Francis yet. I don't. There's a lot I don't know. And there's a lot that we have yet to reveal. And there's things that we may never reveal. And that's the kind of exciting part. I mean, sometimes I hear actors talk about, maybe actors who are in series, I hear say this occasionally, that, you know, I know who my character is and I show up every day and I play it and I know exactly how to do it. And it's so opposite for me, because one of the great joys and the thing that sort of keeps me excited is coming to work and looking at a script that, or a scene that Bo and our team of writers might be working on, and sort of discover something that I didn't know, something that is, you know... In any scenario where you're playing a complex character and the onion continues to get peeled back and you continue to discover how deep the place is from which a person's life happens, that's a very exciting thing. Not knowing is more exciting than knowing.
How does that work when you're on the stage performing Richard III 200 times?
Well, it works in entirely different ways to some degree, because theater and film are such different beasts. One is very organic, which is the theater. One is very unorganic, which is shooting a film or a television show. And the reason that theater is very organic is that, you know, you begin a process of discovering a play. You come together every day for 6 weeks or 7 weeks with a group of actors, and you all are up for the same thing. You're all there every day. You're there exploring it and trying new things and new avenues and walking down blind alleys and opening up other blind alleys and asking more questions. And over a period of time, you are together as a company creating a world and a family, both a theater family but also a family within the world that you're creating. And then you get up every night and you get this chance to explore and see how deep this place is and how far the well goes. And theater is like, I often use the analogy that it's like playing tennis. It's sort of the way I try to explain it to people, which is that, because sometimes people say, well, isn't it boring? You're doing the same thing every night and it's always the same. And it's like, no, it's a little bit like playing tennis. Hmm. If you went out 8 times a week and played tennis, yes, it's the same rules, but it's a different game every time you're out on that court, and you're working on a different part of your game. And so there is a – why we've called the film Now is because not – is it only the first word of the first sentence of the play, Now is the winter of our discontent. It is also what theater is. It's now. It's at this moment. Now, the difference between that and film is that you might have time to camera block. You might have time to make a decision about whether you're going to have a cup of coffee in your hand or not have a cup of coffee in your hand. You might have a chance to rehearse a little bit with the actors who flew in the night before to shoot the two scenes that they're in on that day. And then they're going to fly out that night because they're in a play somewhere else or another movie or whatever. The camaraderie or the family unit that happens in the theater really happens more with the crew, because they are consistent and they stay. Whereas with the actors, you work with actors only based on how the schedule is organized, when a set is being built, when a location is ready, and when they're available to shoot. So it's a very unorganic experience in that even if you are able to make, let's say, good choices and correct choices in those very quick moments where you're about to roll camera and you have to move, you have to go. No matter how good you might be, when they cut it all together and make it look like you played it that way, you'll never be any better. And in the theater, you can be better. You can be better tomorrow night than you were tonight. You can be better in 2 weeks. You can be better in 3 weeks. And in a film or a TV show, I'll never be any better. And that's frustrating, especially when you go back and watch things that you haven't seen in a long time and go, ah, how did I miss that moment?
I'm speaking with Kevin Spacey, actor and artistic director for the Old Vic. The new documentary is Now in the Wings on a world stage. It documents a tour of Richard III across 3 continents. Why make this documentary, Kevin Spacey?
A lot of people write me. A lot of people stop me in the street. Sometimes I'm asked in interviews, why is theater so important to you? I mean, you're like this theater rat. You went to London to start this theater company. You've been there for a decade. You know, I don't understand. Why don't you just make movie after movie and make all that money? And I go, well, I guess unless you're able to understand what it's like to experience the process of putting a play on, of the ritual of getting up every night, and, as I said, trying to be better, to share an experience with an audience afresh and anew every time. I made this film to answer some of those questions, to bring an audience backstage in the most intimate way that I think has been recorded on a level on this scale, and certainly in terms of also the fact the film is a bit of a travelogue, because Beijing, Istanbul, Naples, San Francisco, New York, Sydney, Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong. I mean, we had this opportunity to go around the world and prove two things. Theater is alive and well all over the world. I mean, audiences came and packed our houses in every city we played at. And I wanted to try to be able to make a film that I guess gives you an opportunity to see what our process is like, to let you, you know, in the wings, see what goes on. You know, because when most people come to a play, they don't think about how long we rehearsed and that we had to do a tech rehearsal that afternoon, and then we had to do a dress rehearsal, and then we finally opened. And, you know, the amount of effort and time and the crew and everything that goes into putting on a play, an audience doesn't think about those things. They come in, they pick up the program, the lights go down, and they have an experience. But all those things happen, and this is an opportunity to take a journey. And what I'm most happy about is that although Sam Mendes and I, in the course of the film, certainly, I would say, are the center of the movie, what actually is wonderful is that you get to know a whole bunch of journeyman actors and actresses who aren't famous, but who've dedicated their lives to this experience. And this is why we do it. And I wanted to give them a voice and bring that experience to an audience that maybe has never had a chance to see it.
I'm speaking with Kevin Spacey, artistic director of London's Old Vic. We're talking about taking Richard III on the road as part of the Bridge Project. Their journey across three continents is captured in the documentary Now, In the Wings on a World Stage. It opens on May 2nd at the IFC Center at 323 6th Avenue, and it will be available for download online at kevinspacey.com. We'll have more after a break. I'm Anna Sale, in for Leonard Lopate, talking with Kevin Spacey, the artistic director for London's Old Vic. We're talking about his new documentary, Now, In the Wings on a World Stage, which captures the tour of Richard III across three continents. Kevin Spacey, how did running, being artistic director of London's Old Vic for a decade, how has that changed you as an artist?
I think in many ways because when I made the decision to go there, it was at a point where I had really spent about 11, 12 years focusing on seeing if I could build a film career. And after American Beauty came out, in all honesty, I thought, well, that sort of went better than I could have hoped. And I thought, now what? And I was quite, even though I'm sure that some people in my life and certainly my agents at the time thought, hey, we're now on this groovy gravy train. We're just going to ride this as long as possible. I was sort of questioning what I wanted to do, and I knew that what I didn't want to do was to fall into the trap that I have watched so often happen, which is that someone reaches a certain level and then they start making lots of movies that maybe they shouldn't have made and doing things for lots of money and prestige, and I wanted something else. I knew that there was a part of me that was just unsettled about the idea that I would spend the next 10 years pursuing the same dream. And what had happened was I had gone to London to do a play, and it was quite a successful production at the Almeida Theatre of a Eugene O'Neill play called The Iceman Cometh. And then we moved that play to extend the run, and we moved to the Old Vic. And I'd been to the Old Vic many times, but I'd never played on its stage. And I fell instantly in love with the place and understood why it had been a favorite of some of the greatest actors of all time. And they asked me, this group that had just purchased the theater for a trust, if I would go on the committee to help find an artistic director. And I guess about a year later, it literally dawned on me one night that as close to Dick Cheney as I'll ever get, I ended up throwing my name in the ring and thought, actually, this is something I want to do. And so I made the decision that rather than go perhaps down the road that everyone sort of might have expected I was going to go down, I decided that I wanted to do something that was bigger than my own career, that was outside of my own ambition, that was about creating a company. And so that whole focus, and I've absolutely been pure to that experience. I mean, I made a vow before I started that no matter what movie opportunity would come along, I would never take a job that took me away for more than 8 weeks. And that was true. There were two occasions where I was away for 8 weeks. And the rest of the films I did during this past 10 years have been, 4 weeks, maybe even less, maybe weeks or days. And it wasn't until the ninth season that House of Cards came along that I felt like we were, by that point, a well-oiled machine, and I had an incredible staff, and that I could take the risk of leaving for 6 months, because House of Cards takes 6 months to shoot a season. And although I go back for important openings and dates and things, I also thought it was valuable for the company to start get used to the idea that I wasn't going to be around, because I'm now in my last year as artistic director. I'll leave my post in August of 2015. But I think everything about the experience has changed me. I'd never run a company before. I certainly had never run a building.
What did you have to learn?
Well, we started very slow in that literally I began in a dressing room with a phone and a producer. And we now have a staff of well over 75, and a front of house crew and a backstage crew and ushers. And you learn to manage a large organization, and you learn to all of the various aspects of running a building that's a nearly 200-year-old building, and the Victorian plumbing and the bombed roof in World War II that's never been fully repaired, and the damp and the ladies lose, and all kinds of issues that one has to face. The fundraising, because we get no public subsidy whatsoever. The tremendous amount of time and effort that takes to be able to raise the money that we needed to do not just our productions on the main stage, but a vast educational department, a program that we created called Old Vic New Voices, which is our way of helping emerging talents, writers, directors, producers, and actors, our community work, our educational work, our work in schools. And then there's, of course, all of the bringing together of my artistic side of it, which is, hiring a director, choosing a play, choosing a couple of leading actors, maybe having something to do with a designer. It's a big, vast, gigantic amount of work, but it has been incredible. I've learned a lot about people, and I've learned a lot about the public. The British public love the Old Vic. They came early, they came often, they told their friends. And I learned a lot about the press. I learned a lot about how things sort of work over there. And it's been the most challenging and satisfying experience I could have hoped to have had.
It's creating an audience for world culture in the 21st century. How did that work, figuring out how to be an administrator in that role? Did that lead to looking at Netflix and seeing maybe I can look at different distribution models for my work?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that there's a direct correlation between the work at the Old Vic and the ultimate decision to enter into a partnership with Netflix for House of Cards. But I would say that you have to be very inventive, particularly when you don't have a lot of money, to get an audience in. I mean, I remember we took a tremendous amount of criticism because I chose not to begin with what might have been expected. And there were a certain number of, I would say, very well-intended critics of ours who felt that the only plays that belonged on the Old Vic stage were Chekhov, Shakespeare, Ibsen, Shaw, period. And I realized early on that when you look at the economics of running a 1,140-seat theater, that if you're not playing at 70 to 75%, you're dead in the water. I wouldn't survive two seasons if I weren't playing at a higher percentage than that. So I had to present work that I felt would be inviting, that would be different from what maybe people might expect on the Old Vic stage, that would introduce theater to a wider, more diverse audience, and particularly a younger audience. So we began to do all sorts of schemes that made the theater welcoming and affordable. And the first thing I did, the very first decision I made, was that I decided that 100 of our seats every night for every performance, from the moment we began until this day, every single performance, 100 seats were set aside for kids under 25 at £12. And as a result of that, over 80,000 young people have been able to come and see our productions in our decade. And lots of initiatives to be able to try to reach out to as broad an audience as possible. And while we took some criticism for that, it worked. And we began to fill that theater. It's not easy, particularly if you don't have any subsidy. You know, you look at a theater like the Royal Court or the Almeida or the Dunmar, these are theaters that are much smaller than the Old Vic, you know, 300 seats, 400 seats, 282 seats. Or you look at a theater like the National Theater, which has three stages and £17 million a year in subsidy. We weren't that fortunate. And so I think that it continues to be a challenge. Right now we've reconfigured the Old Vic into a theater in the round, which we'd done many years before, and we've brought it back now.
I want to ask you about the audience of children and young people that you've targeted. You talk a lot about cultivating emerging talent. Where's that commitment to mentorship come from?
It comes because I'm a product of it. You know, I grew up at a time when there was a tremendous amount of funding for arts and schools, and I grew up in the state of California. So I was exposed as a young, budding thespian to all kinds of experiences where I got to go to see professional actors in plays, go to workshops, do all kinds of extraordinary festivals. And I did workshops with incredible people that really touched me and took me under their wing. And so it's my belief that it's time for me to do the same for others.
I've been speaking with Kevin Spacey, actor and artistic director of London's Old Vic. The new documentary is now in the wings on a world stage. Thank you so much for coming in. ¶¶